sweatshirts, mugs, books, and more. Jack Andrea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911.
Welcome to Generation Now, the show by and for millennials on WGTD HD 91.1 FM. Thanks for joining us. After reaching the pinnacle of her life, my guest did something that is extremely rare. She started over, but this time with her dream tribe and the vision of her one life at the forefront of her mind. She was the former executive producer of The Oprah Winfrey Show and then served as co-president at the Oprah Winfrey Network. Now, she's the co-founder of The Pillar Life and co-host of the hit podcast, The Sherry and Nancy Show. Her new book, The Beautiful No, and Other Tales of Trial, Transcendence, and Transformation, goes on sale June 4th. Please welcome a media mogul and the truly remarkable and incomparable Sherry Salata to the show. Thanks for being here.
Oh my goodness, you are amazing. What an intro that was, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wowzer, I sound really fancy.
I have to start off with this because 5 years ago we had a conversation. I was 22 at the time and you were still at OWN. And I don't know if I've ever told you this, but at the time that I had reached out to your team for a year and I said, I'm going to have an interview with Sherry. That was like a goal of mine. And at that same time, my family was homeless and we were living in the basement of our coworkers. So it wasn't our home and I didn't even have internet access. So I'd have to go to the McDonald's right down the street to do schoolwork and anything. And so I got the call in the McDonald's from your team that said, yep, Sherry is going to do this interview. And I just have to thank you so much because you, that moment let me know that there was an out, that I had that there was a potential to have a new chapter for me. And since then I've gone on, I've gotten my bachelor's degree. I'm now at Harvard University as a distance learner, getting my master's degree, going back and forth. And all of that because of a 15-minute conversation that you so graciously allowed me to have with you. So I just wanted to publicly say thank you for really beginning the best chapter of my life and being such a pivotal part of that. So thank you.
Okay. Of course, I did not know that. And this is the magic. This is the magic of the universe, my friend, is that you can imagine as president of OWN and former EP of The Oprah Show, I got gajillions of requests to speak to people. Could you just speak to me? Could you just give me an interview? And it isn't like I wasn't interested. It was that I didn't have time. But something spoke to me. One of my assistants brought something spoke to me. And of course, I had no idea that you were homeless. Of course, I had no idea what was riding on that conversation for you. But I cannot even tell you, this is the best news I've ever heard that you are. I mean, I can't even wait to see what kinds of other things you dream up in your life.
Oh, thank you so much. And you gave me a tour of Harpo Studios.
I do remember that.
And I was so scared. I was frozen, because it's just like I saw those hallways on The Oprah Show. Right. And I'm walking the hallway with all the photos of the guests and things like that. And there I was standing there with Sherry Salata. Like, are you kidding me? And so it's just such a magical experience. And thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You are so welcome. So absolutely.
You talk about misery, right? And that was a miserable time for me. But you say it can be a guiding compass. So kind of talk about how misery in your life, motivated you, was a guiding force for you.
Well, I mean, and hopefully this will resonate with your listeners. And listen, here's what I say. I'm a lot older than a lot of you, but use my life as a bit of a cautionary tale. basically what I wrote about was that from in my 20s, when I was out charging around trying to, create a sexy career for myself, I did everything wrong. I did everything wrong. There was no planning, no preparation. I did no real dreaming about what I really wanted and what would really, light my heart on fire. And instead, I just kind of bounced around from job to job. And what years later, not tons of years later, but many years later, I was able to look at it and say, oh, I had set myself up so that misery was my compass. So for instance, I graduate from college. I went to the University of Iowa, go Hawks. And and I didn't do any of the planning. I didn't do any of the interviewing. And next thing you know, I'm in Dallas, Texas, working in a typing pool. And then I'm trying to turn that into my path to retirement. You know, I get promoted to a more senior typist. And, you know, I would just stay in these situations until I was so miserable I could hardly get out of bed. Then I'd take the next ill-fitting job. I was a toy store manager, then another toy store manager, then a 7-Eleven manager, then a 7-Eleven store supervisor. I just kept taking all these jobs. And listen, I had some laughs. I met some wonderful people, but the jobs weren't right for me. They weren't fulfilling. It wasn't what I wanted to do. But I would stay in them until I was so miserable. And I'm like, wow, when you make misery your compass, that means you are guaranteeing yourself that you are frequently going to experience misery. And I thought to myself, what would happen if you made happiness your compass? Because let me tell you this, my friends, it may seem like you're trying to get a snappy resume and filled with lots of interesting jobs to make you super attractive to the next company. But the real game, the real success, the real thing we all seek is happiness. That is why we want those great jobs and those great work experiences and those great relationships. Happiness is our end game. So if we could cut out all the malarkey and say, all right, happiness is my compass. I'm going to lean into what feels good. I'm going to lean away from what doesn't feel good and chart my course that way. That means I'm perpetually putting myself in position to choose happiness, to choose a happy life experience, to be a part of things that feel good, to do work that I love with people I love, for people I love. That's the choice to make.
And see, you're bringing up such great points, because I think, especially, you know, my age group, we get kind of conflicted. So when did you know that it kind of transferred from, I'm going to try this job, I'm going to be great at it, to misery? Because I think we get confused on when that moment is, when you realize you need to go, like, this is not the right fit for you.
Yeah. Well, I think it's different for anybody. But if you are practicing a life that's mindful, meaning, like, listen, if I could do it again, the sooner I would learn how to meditate and make that a daily practice, the sooner I'd get to happiness. So if you are making taking care of yourself a priority, so you are learning how to meditate, you are practicing some sort of physical movement every day, you're making sure that your diet includes tons and tons of plants, like a real life source. You are surrounding yourself with people who are uplifters, and you're making it a practice to be an uplifter yourself. You're three quarters of the way there, because then you're in a job where you know it's not the right fit. You're so tuned into your own heart and soul, it's an easy thing to go, wow, well, this has been fine, but this isn't the right fit. I'm going to open myself up to new opportunities. And, you know, not kind of do or dying your way through a bunch of different jobs.
Mm-hmm. I want to.
Which is my story.
Yeah, no. And see, that's kind of because you hear stories about, you know, and business reports about millennials who just don't stick around to jobs. They just jump and jump and jump and jump and jump. And so I think we're just searching, right? Searching for that right fit. And so I think those are really valid points, that if you take care of yourself, that's most of the work. And then you're in tune with yourself. And I know I have to get better at that. And that leads me to the book, because, Sherry, you are so raw in this book. I mean, you put it, I mean, a lot out there, all out there, talking about weight, cholesterol, cancer, and your path to finding yourself. So why did you decide to just be so open in this book?
Well, otherwise, there's no real reason to write one, Troy. Well, here's why. Because I look at people in my age group, and that's far older than yours. And, you know, at a certain point, we have to look at our lives and say, okay, am I in the middle of my life, or am I just wrapping things up? What does retired mean? Am I just like waiting on, you know, until my final days, or or every day, am I creating a new set of glory days and glorious experiences? And, you know, all of us who are my age would say to our younger selves, first of all, don't take it all so seriously, have more fun, take better care of yourself, make self-care a top priority, and have a lot more fun. And then for those of us who are our age, like I had to look at my life and say, wow, I've spent 20 something years working 70, 80 hours a week, sometimes more, on call 24/7. And the rest of my life, even though I had all the information about how to have a fully integrated whole life, I didn't make those choices. I stayed unconscious. I put everything off. My ways of managing stress were, I smoked, I ate all kinds of crap. I was, you know, addicted to diet soda. I was always trying to comfort the stress I felt at a very high-powered career. And what I realized is, wow, you might have a whole second half, another 30, 40, 50 years, Sherry. What is the life of your dreams? You've manifested the career of your dreams. Now let's manifest the life of your dreams, and let's really understand what that is. And it's the full-on joyride, Troy. It's the full-on joyride. I want every area of my life to sing and hum and be real dreamy.
That's so true. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because you know, I spend most of my time thinking about what that next move is. How can I get bigger? How can I get to the next level? And I've had conversations with my mom, and she said, Troy, slow down. I said, Mom, but I can't. There's all this competition and people way smarter than me, you know, and I have to compete. I have to be in the game. And she calls me and we talk, and she says, Troy, it's okay. You know, and in the end, your happiness and your peace will mean so much more. And I think that's exactly what you're saying, is that you want all aspects of your life to be in sync. And a lot of times it's really easy for that to get out of balance, especially when you're climbing and trying to scrape and try to get to that next level.
Well, and that's what I also want to challenge you on, which is alignment overcomes everything. Like, do you have to scrape and stress out and climb, or the more you get into alignment and stay mindful and take care of yourself? My good friend, Dr. Laura Berman, says this: what's for you will not get past you. What's for you will not get past you. And here's what I've begun to see now that I live my day in and day out life differently than I used to, that it's an easier ride, more abundant, more possibilities, more fulfilling, when you put being in alignment with source, however you define that, you know, with your heart and soul's desires, when you take 15, 20 minutes a day to daydream and really kind of feel the energy of those dreams you want to stir up, that maybe that's the shortcut to everything you want.
Wow, Sherry, I'm blown away, because I've never thought of it that way before, because the way I was raised, you know, my mom was a single mom, and we always scraped. And so I guess I've internalized that and made that the normal behavior. That's what you have to do to get out of your situation. But if you're in alignment, what's for you won't get past you. Wow.
That's right. That's the shortcut. That's the shortcut. And very much like, very similar to you. You know, I had a Midwestern DNA work ethic, which is, you know, you're off to the old salt mine with your lunch pail and, you know, you just work your fingers to the bone. But here's what I see. What I see is that's the long way. That's the long way to where you want to go. And the short way is really harnessing that quantum field of possibilities. Listen, You know, we're a bit in the pioneer days of what's possible, because someday people are just going to have a thought and manifest things. But we can be on the leading edge of that and understand this, that there are unseen, there's a divine intelligence and mystical forces afoot. And we call that synchronicity. We call that coincidence. You know, I like to think of that as real life quantum magic. And the sooner we tap into that through alignment and centering, the sooner our lives get a whole lot easier and a whole lot more exciting.
Let's talk about exciting. We're going to go back a little bit and talk about your career with Oprah, starting as a promo producer, as you say, in the basement.
And
working your way up. First of all, quickly, were you sad that the studios came down in Chicago?
Oh, gosh. You know, I haven't been by there. I think that I might shed a little tear. You know, I think in my little fan heart, you know, so even though I worked there and I worked for Oprah, I was also a fan like anybody else. I was equally in the audience. And I was always hoping that that would kind of end up to be a museum, because
yes,
for, you know, for those of us there, you know, there's a finite number of people who had the privilege and honor of serving in that organization over all those years. And I don't know, those hallways were super special. There was, you know, there's energy in those walls in that studio. And yeah, so I think I'm not sure I'm ready to drive by it. I think it would be very, very sad for me.
Yeah. And it was when I heard that it was going down, and I think Oprah said it was kind of, I don't know if she said it was bittersweet, but she, you know, said that she was okay, that it was like the next. But for me, it's like, oh, as the fan, you know, like, oh, my gosh, all this history, all the moments that are, as you say in the book, so many people come up to you and say that the show raised them. I'm lucky enough that my mother was the primary caretaker, but Oprah played a huge factor, because she would come home, she'd press record or set the VCR, and we'd sit at home when I'd come up home from school together, and we'd watch that show. But you were working so hard, like you said, 80 hours. I mean, that's unbelievable. Talk about that ride.
I mean, it's like we'll never come again. It was a once in a lifetime experience. You know, on paper, it was a daytime talk show. But I think for those of us who are a part of it, and those of us around the world who watch the show regularly, there was something else very special going on there. It was a connective force. It was light. It illuminated possibilities, and you know, it was a joyride. It was informative, and you know, and we could trust Oprah as curator of that really special, you know, ride that we all took together. So
I mean, it was a fascinating ride, and you know, through that, you said that you developed some of those habits that were, you know, detrimental to you, that you rectified in what you called kind of a reckoning. That's the word you use a lot. So my question for you is, can people have multiple reckonings in their lives at different chapters, or was it just one for you, or can people have multiple? And talk about kind of the concept of what that is.
Well, yes, the concept is basically you sit down and take stock. With tender eyes, you take stock, you go through all the areas of your lives, and you see where you haven't manifested your dreams. You know, obviously, what I found, and I write about in The Beautiful No, is that, you know, my life was very, very lopsided. And, you know, here's a really great inside story for you that just recently happened. So I write in... in the book, I write about how I would always run from Dr. Oz when I was at Harpo.
Yes, I read this.
I would say, I'd wave at him from a distance and run the other way, because because I probably had just smoked a cigarette and smelled like it, and I probably had a big fat diet soda and a latte and God knows what else in the control room with me. And I felt such shame, you know, I just really, I didn't want him to examine me close up. So I just taped his show for the book.
Oh, wow.
Flew to New York. He walked me out. He put my name in the big graphics. It was adorable. And we sat down and I confessed to him that very thing, that I loved you so much. I worshiped you, but I couldn't let you get near me because I had such shame about all of my shameful habits and addictions, et cetera, as I was a very educated professional woman, high-powered woman. And you know what he said to me? He said, Sherry, I thought you didn't like me.
Really?
And I mean, I had to try not to cry.
Wow.
Because that hit me so hard. And we had a little healing. I'm like, oh, not like you. I adore you. You know, I think that you're the best thing that happened to America. So off I go. And I'm really thinking about that, Troy. I'm really thinking about that. He thought I didn't like him. And yet I come up with another epiphany, that our poor habits and the things that we're ashamed of keep us so disconnected from people. We don't even know the disconnection we create in our life until maybe it's too late. You know, fortunately, Dr. Oz and I were able to have, I can't call him Mehmet. I mean, he's Dr. Oz to me. But fortunately, we were able to have that honest conversation and a real healing came of it. But I was like, wow, that's a cautionary tale right there.
Mm. And you know what's so interesting that you bring that up? Because that speaks to me actually in this moment. You know, because I've gained some weight and I've noticed, and people have, I mean, they haven't said anything, thank goodness, you know, and I've been thinking about, you know, just how ashamed I am of that and how I rarely look in the mirror anymore because I'm ashamed of what happened, what I allowed to happen. And you're so right. I've been feeling more disconnected from people. And I know that's on me. And it's amazing that Dr. Oz felt a totally different thing, right?
Yeah.
Ugh, that's amazing.
Well,
wow.
Listen, I write about my struggles with weight in the book, and it really is about, you know, you're filling something that's empty. You're stuffing down feelings. You're eating your feelings, whether they're celebratory feelings or bored feelings or stressed feelings or whatever. And at the end of the day, it goes back to where we kind of began, which is, you know, the sooner and the younger you can start to put those practices into your life, you know, a 20-minute meditation, plant-based eating, you know, the proper amount of water, which is, you know, take your body weight divided by half. That's the number of ounces. And I say this, and if you don't really know the power of that, you think that that sounds so silly, but a glass of water can change your mood. You know, the proper amount of water, you can lose 20 pounds just really taking care of that. And, you know, that would, if you say, you know, I love when people say they have no regrets. I really don't believe that. I don't think you can live a big human life and not have things that you would do differently. And for sure, what I would do differently is starting in college and even well on through my 20s, I would make finding my practices, the health and wellness and spiritual practices that make me feel like my body and spirit are connected and soaring, I would get those into place and I would make those choices every single day.
Hmm.
And I can't even imagine. I mean, I ended up EPing the Oprah show. I can't even imagine what kind of glories might have awaited me had I really made taking care of myself a priority.
Hmm. I want to talk about another pivotal story in The Beautiful No, which is just an incredible, incredible book, which is the story of your mother and the final 3 days. And as I'm in my late 20s now, my mother is 69. She had me when she was 41. This was before Madonna and all these other people had kids in their 50s. Yeah. So she was in a, you know, ICU. They didn't know what to do with her. But our relationship is shifting in a way that I was not ready for. You know, I'm helping her out a little bit more than she's helping me. And so I'm curious about how that shift happened for you and those final 3 days. Were you ready? Were you prepared? Did you see it, you know, or was it out of, were you begging for more time?
Yeah, that's so interesting and very, very good question. And I would say I've experienced both. I've the very sudden, unexpected death of my younger brother, which, really took us all out. And then the long, slow death. My mother had cancer for 5 years. And so even, I hate to say it, the last thing you want is somebody to suffer. But it's a little easier when you have so much time to acclimate and say goodbye. And still, it's not enough time. But the amazing thing with my mom is, in that chapter, it's called Your Last 3 Days on Earth. She and I sat on their green plaid couch, basically for 3 days, and we kind of talked through things. And, there's things that you can say, and then there's things that, we're not going to unpack that at this 11th hour. But I what I could feel was, as sick as she was, as much suffering as she was enduring, that she would give anything for more days and for more time. And then I thought, I could, as an observer, as a front row observer to her life, I could look back and see all the days she wasted worrying about things that never happened, worrying about what other people thought of her or the rest of us, all that unlived life. And what I could see is, as I was sitting there holding her hand as a daughter, still frightened about losing my mother, I could also see that there is something so big about this moment that, I'm watching my mother at the end of her life, who would give anything to have the day she wasted back. And that turned to me and say to myself, Sherry, what about the days you wasted? Okay, you're not sick. You may have more time. Let's make every day count from here on out. And, I didn't know my mother was going to die in 3 days, but that was the last 3 days I spent with her. And I feel like in spirit, that she has come to me. She inspired me to write that chapter, and it really is for this lesson. You don't want to get to 75 years old and have to come to a reckoning about your unlived life, about all the dreams you didn't make come true. Now is the moment to fully inhabit your life, whether you're 21, 27, or whether you're, in your 50s like me.
And you mentioned earlier in the book that you thought about kind of your headstone. You said, that you were walking toward an elegant little stone with a plaque in a pretty meadow. I read what I know in my heart is true. Sherry Salata, she had a great job for a long time. And I'm wondering if the death of your mother made you think about not only what was going to be on her, what her legacy would be, but what yours would be.
Well, listen, every life experience can absolutely expand us, expand our hearts, and expand our understanding of how to walk through this human life. And I certainly made sure that my mother's death was one of my most expansive experiences. That tombstone exercise is a really good one. It's a good one when you're in your 20s and you think you're chasing for success. It's an exercise that's done by many of the masters, which is, what do you want that tombstone to say? And I knew when I did that exercise what was true. Sherry Salata had a great job for a long time and not much else. And so that's my recommitment, my dedication to myself that I will, in this second half of my life, fully inhabit my life. There will be no unlived life for me from here on out. And when I go to do that tombstone exercise, like at in my last 3 days, it's going to be very different.
I want to end with a quote from your book, The Beautiful No. And you write on page 17, what makes the transformation meaningful is the before. And the great stories don't just leap from before to after. They weave a narrative that connects the struggles to the triumphs, the despair to the elation. And I want to thank you again for being an inspirational force at two very different chapters of my life. This book, I know everyone listening, it's going to illuminate your life and change the perspective that you have on your life, and hopefully begin a new chapter for all of you that read it. I want to thank you so much.